Another edition of Pittsburgh Pop with Rob Owen and me, Tim Benz. Happy that you're with us as we get rolling here. Another podcast for you, our weekly look at pop culture with Rob Owen from TV Talk and TV Q&A. You can check me out on the sports side, Breakfast with Benz. Lots going on there as we continue to cover Steelers training camp. The Steelers actually play this week against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Friday night. So we look forward to that broadcast, and we'll have lots to talk about coming off of that as well next week. But Rob, first and foremost, I did see Barbie this past weekend. Yes.
Well, you and others helped push it past $1 billion.
$1 billion already in 2 weeks, huh?
$1 billion worldwide. Yes. Not domestic. That's the worldwide gross.
So first and foremost, Margot Robbie is fantastic. You know, I think it's almost to the point now where I think that she is so gorgeous that it almost dulls our ability to talk about how good of an actress she is. I think it obscures our ability to talk about how skilled she is at her craft. Everybody focuses on how beautiful she is, and she is. But I think she is a tremendous actress. I loved her in I, Tonya. I thought she was fantastic in this. I thought she was good in the Quentin Tarantino movie. About Hollywood? Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. She was great in The Wolf of Wall Street. She just captivates and captures the camera every time she's on it. And she's so committed to every character that she does. I love her as an actress. She's an 11, sure. But as far as an actress, she might be a 12. I think she's great.
Yeah, I thought she was excellent in this. I will not be at all surprised if she gets an Oscar nomination for Best Actress. And I actually think Ryan Gosling could get a supporting actor nomination as well. And I think that there is no question that both Barbie and Oppenheimer will be in the running for Best Picture at the Oscars next year.
You know, and I thought the girl who played the sort of disenfranchised, disenchanted tween,
America Ferrera's daughter,
she was good. You know, I thought, like you said, Ryan Gosling was funny, and that was almost like a Jim Carrey-esque kind of performance, in my opinion. You know, Jim Carrey could just go out there and do whatever he wants because he's Jim Carrey. And when you're playing a caricature of a caricature of a character like Ryan Gosling was doing, you can have free reign. And when you have that much canvas to paint with, you can do what he did. Not a lot of actors get that in a role. So credit to him for taking full advantage. It was a little goofy at times, but, you know, so was Will Ferrell, for that matter, playing the Mattel executive. But
Will Ferrell was very Will Ferrell. I mean, we have seen Will Ferrell play that character before.
The movie itself, though, and I've said this to other people, I'll say it to you. I still have a problem right now, as I did the moment I walked out of that theater, wrapping my brain around how lighthearted a movie it was, and at the same time how heavy-handed it was. Rob, there was a message to Barbie. Did you know there was a message to Barbie? There was a message to Barbie. I don't know about you, but I love it when my movie has a message, and boy was I hit in the face with the message. Whap!
It was clear that the movie had a message, but it is a message that has not necessarily been transmitted all that often. So I had no problem with there being a message, because, as you said, it was presented equal parts message and completely goofy and silly. And I thought that she balanced those two things. Greta Gerwig, the director, balanced those things well.
I thought it was tilted a little too much towards the messagey side, because the content is so silly. The content of taking Barbie and making it a real life thing is a silly premise, which a lot of times I thought they did well. I thought they executed well, but at the same time, like, I'll give you a couple examples. Okay. You know how they were doing the songs in the background, especially early in the movie, they kind of had their own soundtrack. They had their own lyrics and all that, you know, they were singing, sure, and they had some goofy kind of funny lines when they had, the Black President Barbie. They had that joke line in there in the lyrics of the song, Our Black President Barbie. Like, I didn't know if I was allowed to laugh at that because I felt like I was being politically incorrect by doing so. You know, like, I thought that they introduced the premise so strong of, you know, we're trying to get something across here. There were times where I wasn't sure if I was allowed to laugh because it was, you know, inappropriate to laugh. I think the other time was when Ken came across into the real world with Barbie, and they're rollerblading down Venice Boulevard, and everybody's like, who are these people? And then clearly the gay couple that walks by, and they kind of leer at him and give him a wink and a nod. Like, it was funny, but like, I didn't know if I was allowed to laugh at that. You know, like it just felt like there were moments where they were trying so hard to contextualize everything in a moment of social awakening. Like, I felt inappropriate that I should be laughing at some of the jokes. And I don't think the audience should be put in that kind of position. You know what I mean?
Not really, because I didn't feel that way at all. I mean, to me, it was pretty clear. They were delivering a message, but at the same time, they were doing it in the gentlest, lightest way possible, so that there were those things put in there that were intentionally meant to be laughs. So I did not have that qualm with the film. If anything, I felt like at times I wish it would have been funnier than it was, but by and large, I thought it was funny enough, and it handled having that serious message that it was getting across. And it wasn't, I don't even know that I would say it was a serious message, as it was just presenting the reality of being a woman. Because I really thought that the America Ferrera speech was kind of interesting. If you sat there and thought about, yeah, there are a lot of, you have to be this and you have to be that.
So I did. Okay. So I'm glad you brought that up, because I was thinking the same thing. And I was thinking back to our podcast last week when you told me to pay attention to that, when you got to that point, because that was, you know, sort of the rising action of the whole conflict, so to speak, of the movie was.
And the thesis of the film in some ways.
How to categorize feminism, or how to define feminism, for lack of a better phrase. So I'll ask you then, how do you think they defined it?
I'm not sure that that was actually what they were saying, is that they were defining feminism. I think they were saying that there are many conflicts that women encounter in the world. And I thought she just did a good job naming those. What I think is most important there is who the vessel was. I think having America Ferrera be the one to deliver that speech, given how we know her through the characters she's played, particularly on TV, particularly in Ugly Betty and in Superstore, she is a very down-to-earth, even-keeled, the characters she's played are typically very down-to-earth, easily accessible, every woman. And I think coming from her, that speech made a lot of sense. So anyway, that was my thought on this.
See, like, when I listened as closely as I could, and I tried to connect all the dots, and boy, she rattled through those points awfully fast. You know, I almost kind of wanted her to slow down a minute so I could grasp every nuance of what she was saying.
I will agree that afterwards I wanted to go back and revisit that and read through it. And I was glad that I found someone had transcribed it. And I did post it on my Facebook and on Twitter, I think, just because. You're right. It was a lot. And I did think I appreciated being able to go back and unpack it a little bit afterwards.
But I also wondered, once you unpacked it, if the message at the end was, you know, feminism is however we want to describe it in the moment. And that, to me, I don't know if that's what they were going for, but that's sort of how I took it. That, you know, how you define it is how it works for you. That feels to me, I don't know if that's all that much of a positive message. If it's a sliding scale and you can appropriate it however you want at a given moment and then completely define it in a different way in the next week, that to me feels wishy-washy.
I'm not sure that it was about defining it as just this is what it is to exist in it. Here, I found the monologue. So the end of it, sort of she says it's too contradictory and nobody gives you a medal or says thank you. And it turns out, in fact, that not only are you doing everything wrong, but also everything is your fault. I'm just so tired of watching myself and every single other woman tie herself into knots so that people will like us. And if all of that is also true for a doll just representing women, then I don't even know. So again, I think it was just sort of putting a name to the conflict, the internal conflict and the confusion, more than it was offering any sort of a definition. I think it was more giving examples of sort of trying to please yourself, which would be the feminist thing, and please others, which is maybe you know, something that everyone has to do in the real world.
Well, you and I just had a conversation about this for 10 minutes, which is a lot better than what normally happens on Twitter, where if you bring up Barbie and you say anything negative about Barbie, you're a chauvinist and a woman hater. So I didn't even bother talking about social media because I didn't want to get myself in that corner, because that's the way it's degenerated. This has turned into this whole gender. It's amazing that this movie has become the gender wars fulcrum that it has online.
I mean, I guess I'm not surprised by that.
I mean, I am surprised, because I just thought when Barbie came out, like, how could anybody have anything negative to say about this, or how could anybody take this too seriously? And then I got up, I was like, okay, I can see why people would want to warp this and turn this into their own hill that they're going to die on. But I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to bother with that. I had my thoughts on it. I knew I'd talk to you about it here, and that was good enough for me, because I figured we could at least talk through some of the gray area between what the characters were saying, as opposed to just screaming about it. Line, as I found the red states and blue states have decided to turn this into, especially at the end, like the last line is people in a snit. I saw that about her saying going to the gynecologist.
Yeah. And I have to say it took me a minute to like put it together and figure that line out. But once I did, it's funny. Yeah,
it is funny.
And I don't know why anyone would. I mean, I guess if you had to explain, I mean, I'm sure my 9-year-old son did not get that, and we didn't explain. Well, actually, I think we did have a conversation and explain that to him a little bit, now that I think about it. But I mean, we talk to our kids about that sort of stuff. So to me, that was not anything worth getting upset about. I suppose if you don't talk to your kids about sex, then and sex education, then I guess that would be upsetting. But I mean, it also
could have been funny if Ken at the same time said, "I'm going to get a prostate exam." You know, like.
Yeah, I suppose if he had come into the real world in that way, that would have been a line he could say.
How about Oppenheimer? You saw Oppenheimer. I'm going to do that on Thursday.
Oh, I am glad you are going to see it. It is excellent. It is really extremely well done. I, you know, there was a show on WGN America, gosh, probably 7 or 8 years ago now, called Manhattan, that basically told the same story, but in series form. And it was a little slow, and it didn't, I think it only lasted 2 seasons. I did not stick with it. It was beautiful. It had great production design. But if you want that story, Oppenheimer gives it to you. Yes, it's a 3.5-hour movie. I actually thought it moved quite well. It felt more like a 2.5-hour movie than a 3.5-hour movie to me. The sound design is incredible. I have heard some people complain they had a little bit of a hard time with hearing the dialogue in some instances. I think that was probably by design, and for the most part, I could understand the dialogue.
Plus, our ears have gotten lazy because we can put anything on closed caption now on our phones.
Well, that is a good point. Or on the TV, you're right. No, it's interesting to me because it is a nuanced approach to the subject of the creation of the atomic bomb. And it's sort of like, it doesn't necessarily come down on a side, was this a good thing? Was this a bad thing? It really explores all of the arguments for and against it. But ultimately it is a portrait of this guy, Robert J. Oppenheimer, who is not a saint by any stretch in the film, and who also vacillates a little bit as well in the film. Which I think allows him to be a whole, fully dimensional character. Christopher Nolan, I think, will hopefully get the Oscar for Best Director for this, because he deserves it. The film, I think, will get the Best Picture Oscar. Cillian Murphy, if I'm saying his name right, he is excellent. I know you know him better than I do because
Peaky Blinders.
Peaky Blinders, yeah.
Yeah, I would have been really disappointed if you told me that there wasn't some sort of conflict and he wasn't at least a bad guy to a certain degree in this, because you can't have him be a total hero. He's got to have
his look, just the way he looks kind of connotes something
evil,
a little sinister, or at least confused. The other one who's, I think, deserves an Oscar nomination in this is Robert Downey Jr. First of all, I didn't even recognize him at first. I was like, I know that guy, but who is he? he looks completely different than Tony Stark. But he is very, very good in this. His performance it's just so leaps and bounds different from what we're used to seeing him.
Who is he?
He plays... a character who is involved in a university and has a role in the atomic program, more so, I think, after the use of the atomic bomb. I can't remember. The film jumps around through time a little bit, but I think his dealings with Oppenheimer are more, there's some before, but mostly after the bomb. And yeah, there are a lot of different characters. There are times where I wasn't always sure who was who because it is a big cast. The thing I found most interesting, Tim, is that there are things, lines of dialogue in there, things that happen that you think, okay, that's for dramatic effect. And in almost every case, it's not. It was actually historically accurate. And I found that out after the fact when I went and did a search on what's true versus fact versus fiction in Oppenheimer. The special effects are the sound effects really are more impressive than the visual effects. Yes, the visual effects are there, but I feel like they are almost in service of the sound, whereas usually the sound is in service of the visuals.
Well, I'll give my review next week when we speak, because I'm going to go see it on Thursday and I'm looking forward to it. I thought Barbie was okay, good, at times really entertaining. And I think Oppenheimer is more my speed of a movie. So I might like it a little bit more.
I think you probably will. My kind of preference is probably more for the dramatic than the comedic. So I think in terms of coming out and just being on sort of a high from the entertainment you saw, I think I got that a little bit more from Oppenheimer than I did from Barbie. But I liked them both, and I'm happy to see that they're both doing well and honestly sort of feeding one another and getting people interested in going back to the movies, because I don't want to see movie theaters close.
All right, well, let's get to some TV stuff here. Premiering August 14th, 11 a.m. weekdays, WQAD TV. Mr. Rogers characters on Don Quixote. Tell us about Don Quixote.
So Don Quixote is already a spinoff from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. It is about the character Don Quixote, which Fred Rogers created that character and named it. Don Quixote was a character, obviously playing off Don Quixote, who was in the neighborhood of make-believe. And Fred Rogers Productions created this spinoff a couple years ago now. It is a puppet show, all live-action puppet work, which I appreciate because nobody is doing that today in children's television at all. So I was really happy that it was not yet another animated show for kids, because there are enough of those. And so for this second season, that, as you said, premieres on August 14th, Trolley, the character, you know, the red trolley from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, arrives in Don Quixote, and it's the same sort of tinkly piano music when Trolley comes in, and Trolley talks with the ding, which they made using the exact same instrument that Fred used to make the ding for the trolley on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. That instrument is called a celesta, which is like a mini piano that was stored at the Fred Rogers Institute in La Trobe, and they went out there and recorded all of the sounds for Trolley and Don Quixote at the Institute at St. Vincent College. So you've got Trolley coming onto the neighborhood. So that's a classic Mr. Rogers name. I'm sorry, Trolley coming onto Don Quixote, which is a classic neighborhood character for the new season. And in addition, they have a new character named Turtle Lou, who is very much Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. He is a speedy delivery person, or I guess turtle, not person. But he has the same cap with the tufts of hair. He's got a mustache, looks exactly like David Newell, who played Mr. McFeely on The Neighborhood, and does the same speedy delivery hand gesture. And again, it's just all a loving homage to Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And I think for fans of the original, even if you're not into children's television, for me at least, it does my heart good seeing that there's little bits of Mr. Rogers continuing to exist in children's programming.
Well, before we go, Rob, there's one other one I want to bring up here, and this is connected to the Steelers directly. Two interesting sports documentaries that are set to be released. One of them is about Tommy John, the famous pitcher after whom the surgery is now named, the career-saving surgery for pitchers who have bad elbows. That should be an interesting watch. And it's also being put out by the same company that's doing a documentary about Mel Blunt, the Hall of Fame cornerback of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, so these both of these films are being produced by Winter State Entertainment. They are currently in the process of finding distribution. Given the subject matter, my sense is that these will end up on a cable network or streaming service. They have not lined those up yet, but it seems to me like sports documentaries are more likely to go there than to go to movie theaters. So once we know where the Mel Blount documentary is going to show up, I will certainly let folks know. At this point, they've just announced it. The film includes interviews with Terry Bradshaw, Joe Green, and even the late Franco Harris. So this has clearly been in production for quite some time.
And you said there's no outlet or date for release yet. Is that correct?
No, they don't have either of those things lined up. I got in touch with the company that's making it, and they indicated that that is what they're in the process of lining up now, is that distribution.
I think a lot of this, based on what I read, a lot of this film is going to be after Mel Blount's career, talking about the youth home that he built in Washington County, right?
Yes, I think I'm sure it will incorporate both, but I think it is, looking at him as a person, and obviously that includes more than just his time with the Steelers.
Did you see the director is actually Will Shields' son?
I did not see that.
I think his first name is Scott. Now I lost it here. Anyway, the director is the son of former NFL All-Pro Will Shields. Solomon Shields is his first. Solomon Shields. Will Shields was a great offensive guard for the Kansas City Chiefs. Just double-checking. Yeah, he is in the Hall of Fame. I thought he was in the Hall of Fame. Multi-time All-Pro, fantastic player. That's an interesting little note there, too. I'm going to have to follow this up a little bit more. That's an interesting storyline to be told for sure, especially if it does focus on everything that Mel's done after his career. He's one of the great guys that I've interviewed. I've always liked interviewing Mel Blount. All right, what do we got coming up in TV Talk and TV Q&A this week, Rob?
For TV Q&A, we have our questions. They continue to come in. People are always interested in what is going on in local TV. And this week, it is a question about not a newscaster, Tim, Edgar Snyder, the TV lawyer.
Oh, is this about him retiring?
Is he going to retire? That's the question. So that is
it's what the most waited upon retirement since Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, well, I'm spoiler alert. He does not have any intention to retire in the traditional sense, and I'll get a little more into that.
At least not from the commercials
column. Not from the commercials. No, they need him for that. And then in TV Talk, we've got Painkiller on Netflix, which is from the writers of Mr. Rogers, Tom Hanks movie. It is basically the same subject matter as Dope Sick, the Michael Keaton miniseries on Hulu. I actually think Painkiller is kind of a better, more interesting take on the same subject matter, but I will be curious to see if other people disagree with that.
And for Breakfast with Ben's this week, we continue our series of podcasts from Steelers training camp at St. Vincent College. Allen Robinson, the new wide receiver, is up today. We'll also hear from new nose tackle Braden Fehoko and the return of Mason Rudolph. Why did he decide to come back to the Steelers? That podcast will go up later in the week as well. And of course, we'll have plenty of coverage going into and coming out of preseason game number one against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Friday. Rob and I will be back with you next week on Monday here on Pittsburgh Pop.